Start with Brother Clint.
Thank you very much, brother. That was excellent presentation, and you answered all of my questions satisfactorily, really. I just wanted to share something interesting that Glenn Osborne shared with me earlier this year. You talked about the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the wonderful impact that had on establishing the accuracy of the Old Testament manuscripts. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently, they're working right now on translating a parchment found in Egypt from the first century of the Gospel of Mark. And it's the first century manuscript ever located.
Right. And I think I've seen some news reports about that. Yeah. I'm anxious to see what the upshot of that will be. I hope it is confirmed as that they have tests. First of all, they can test the actual material that it's written on. But there are tests that have to do with paleography, ancient writing. They can tell by the way the letters were formed. They can tell by a number of factors. They can date these documents because as time went on, there were changes in the material they wrote on, style of writing, scribal practices. I know Mike's done a lot of work in this area as well, and he's got quite a collection of Old English Bibles. I think he shared them sometimes when he's held meetings and talked on how he got the Bible. And that's a very wonderful thing. I have only one thing that I've contributed to the decor in my home, and it was a gift from Mike. It's a page out of the, is it the Geneva Bible or the Great Bible? I think it's the Great Bible. Yeah, it was a great gift, yeah. Amid all the trinkets and bric-a-brac that my wife has decorated our house with, bunnies and snowmen and all that stuff, I've got one contribution, and it's a page out of the Bible from 1531, I believe, before anybody who came over in the Mayflower was even born. And I just sit and stare at that thing sometimes. It's just amazing to me, and I thank Mike for that. But there's much, much older textual support for our Bible than that.
Well, not to hurt your feelings, but he gave me a Geneva page too. I think he's handing them out pretty freely these days. But Well, I just thought I would add that you know, they're finding more manuscript evidence for the New Testament all the time.
Yeah.
This article says that included in that dig were second century fragments from Luke and some of Paul's letters and a sermon on the Book of Hebrews, the 11th chapter of Hebrews. So a lot of exciting information.
Well, let me tell you something about this, brethren. As infidelity has grown and its influence spread, back in the early 1800s, they started criticizing the Book of John and the New Testament in general as the work of men of the second and third centuries. And it just seems like right apace as these infidels have launched their attacks, more and more evidence has come to light that if taken in the proper spirit, in other words, not with an attitude, a presupposition of disbelief, which is what the secular humanists basically have. They've just written out of the picture any possibility of believing any evidence at all. And so their condemnation is just. But to an open-minded person, the evidence just keeps coming in. It just keeps developing. And more and more, is that the case? This world, this generation, especially with the marvels of this technology and the internet, has least excuse for knowing and believing the Bible than any generation that has ever lived. It seems to me it would be so appropriate if the Creator of the universe decides in a day and time when there is maximum availability of His Word to the world, that at such a time, this world would be brought to its end. Because the idea is, it's out there, it's everywhere. There are no people except Trekkies that speak Klingon, but you can get a copy of the Bible, the New Testament at least, in Klingon. Imagine the time involved in doing that. But almost every language on the face of the earth, you can read the Word of God. And we're seeing some really dramatic results in some parts of our world today, and we're thankful for that. And we just feel like we're digging in stony ground sometimes right here in this country. But we keep on keeping on because we know that the seed can fall into good hearts and bring forth a bountiful crop.
Any other brother have any other questions? Brother Roger Boone.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate your talk. Now, I want to just bring up, I use a New King James Bible, and I read those little notes on the bottom all the time, N-U, M, and all that stuff. And I don't know where I got this, but I have this impression that when it says the N-U doesn't include this, that that probably means Codex, and I'll say these wrong, Vaticanus and Codex.
Vaticanus, Alexandrinus, Alexandrian, the Alexandrian manuscript, and Sinaitic.
Yeah, Codex, for the most part. Vaticanus, and Sinaitic.
You support me on this, Mike?
What's that?
Vaticanus, yes. Alexandrian, and Sinaiticus.
Okay, except for the Alexandrian. Those other two, that means they probably don't have that in it. Now, I'm not sure that I'm right, but would the NU allow Codex Vaticanus and Codex Sinaiticus, however we said, to overrule most of the other information? Or
the Alexandrian? The Alexandrian?
But sometimes, does the Alexandrian always agree with the other two?
No, not always. There are differences between the three.
So do they let two of them overrule all the
rest? Well, I can't remember the specific case, but McCord in his appendix points out one case where they should have and they didn't, where the reading in the Alexandrian was and is judged by many textual critics as inferior. But I can't recall what that is. I would recommend you do some reading. I believe that there are some valid criticisms of the Alexandrian priority. Some of these criticisms date back to Dean Bergen back in the 1800s. Some of his criticisms really weren't cogent. They really didn't wear well. Some of them do. I think the modern defense of the Byzantine text form, Maurice Robinson, all you got to do is go to Google, type in Maurice Robinson and Byzantine, and you'll come up with several examples of that, probably in a PDF format. It is the foreword or the appendix one to that that publication 2005, that new Greek text according to the Byzantine text form. But now, again, I want to emphasize this: don't run away with the idea that there are some big differences between National United Bible Society and the Byzantine, whether you're talking about Textus Receptus or Farstad or Robinson. You can see what the differences are in your New King James Version, when you look and see all those little notes at the bottom. There's not a lot of them in any part, probably more in Revelation than any other book. And the reason for that is because of the way Erasmus had to go about doing the book of Revelation. He actually, in some parts of it, had to back translate from Latin because he did not have a Greek manuscript. He was dealing with a handful, 6 to 12 maybe, and that became the basis for the Textus Receptus. But think about it. Before that, you had thousands of manuscripts all over the world. Here's a Christian in Ethiopia reading his. Here's a Christian in Rome reading his. Here's a Christian in Parthia reading his. And there probably were some minor differences among those three, but they all read the Word of God. They all understood their duty, and it remained for them to obey it. And to cast aspersion on the Word of God by giving out that the Bible's full of errors, which is simply parroting some infidels, is wrong. Now you all know why I can't explain anything briefly. I get enthused and carried away.
Including remarks for us?
I did not talk very much at all about translations, and I do believe formal equivalence must be the standard. And I recommend Robert Martin's book, Accuracy in Translation. The book was originally written as a critique of the NIV. It was not written in an unkind or attacking spirit. He's very fair and very balanced and very, very good. Sets down the principles that have to characterize a translation that is a standard translation for the church to use. And, you know, he said at the time when he wrote this book, and it's probably about 15 years ago now, that maybe we haven't seen it yet, but maybe there's another, maybe there's a translation coming that will be for future generations the standard translation. And, you know, whether that has actually been seen or not, some people say it's the English Standard Version. Has a lot to commend it, but for now, I'm using the New King James Version. I think it helps address the need to communicate in language that's easier to understand without raising difficulties, and some brethren have, and I think that this falls into the realm of what Romans 14 teaches. Some brethren have problems about using modern translations, but I'm not going to say any more than that. Study the issue for yourself. Accuracy of translation is good. These other books will give you good information about how we, you know, there was the inspiration and confirmation of the word that was miraculous, but then God has left it to copyists and preachers to get out the word to the world. Printers now too, or computer programmers actually too. We don't have infallible guidance. We have to do our best.